stand by for action. We are about to launch Stingray.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to a brand new episode of Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm okay.
Well, are you a little under the weather? Is that what's the problem, or what's going on
here? I've had a week off work, and I'm back at work tomorrow. So, yeah, I'm never in a good mood the night before I have to go back to work after being off. Is that also going to work and everyone saying, hey, how's it feel to be back? And it's like, well, how do you think I feel? I've had to get up out of bed before I'm...
But Dazza, you love your job, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
I'm reminded of the Cypress Hill song when they're talking about how glamorous rap is. It's like, well, it's a cool job, but it's still a job.
Yeah, but there's jobs and there's jobs.
I see. I hear you. Okay, explain a little bit what that Stingray intro is, because I never heard of it. Obviously, like most, I couldn't say most, but a lot of people I've heard of Thunderbirds. This is very similar to Thunderbird, correct?
Yeah, it's basically made by the same guy, Jerry Anderson, who made a ton of these shows of using puppets. Thunderbirds was the one that was like the big, you know, the big star and the one that sort of like most people know. I think even in other countries, it was a hit, but there was, Stingray was another one, nowhere near as popular, but it had sort of like, you know, a following. And it was, it was just basically set around, it was a similar sort of thing to Thunderbirds, except this one was set around a base that had a submarine called Stingray. And this one was a lot more, I won't say it was more action packed than Thunderbirds, but whereas Thunderbirds was always, they were going to places to rescue people and stuff like that, Stingray was basically always sort of going out to basically battle, sea creatures and stuff like that. They were at war with this Atlantean, amphibian race that used to basically go around in this, piranha shaped submarine. So that was it was one of these shows as well where they used to use a stock footage. So they would reuse the same footage of the submarine battles again and again, like, you know. So, but yeah, it was there was a ton of these shows. There was Captain Scarlet and the Mr. Ones. That was a real popular one. Fireball XL5.
Because I'm asking, well, looking at Thunderbirds, obviously that's incorporates jets and aircraft. And this is Stingray. This is aquatic vehicles. I assume there was a land version of this.
Well, a show with a land version.
Yeah, because it's like, it only makes sense. You go from air to ocean to land, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, well, but actually, there was one called Supercar. That was the very early one, which was basically like a sort of a car that could do all these gimmicks and stuff like that. So, but yeah, like I said, the Fireball XL5, which was like that was an early one as well, which was like a space exploration one. Captain Scarlet was a pretty weird one, because that was basically a guy who was indestructible, and pretty much every week he would pretty much be killed or sort of suffer some sort of like massive like sort of trauma, but he'd be back in the next episode. And that was quite a surreal one, that one, Captain Scarlet.
Okay, since we're talking all things television, let's go into this week's news with the Luke Cage Netflix series has made its way to the internet. Now, I have to know, since I haven't watched it yet, Dazza, what do you think?
I've got to say, I really, really enjoyed it. I loved it. In fact, I would say that of the four Netflix Marvel series, this is probably my favorite. As a series from start to finish, I think this one, the strongest one, the most consistent one. And I've enjoyed all of them, pretty much. I love the two Daredevil series. I love the Jessica Jones ones. But it was just something about this one that just sort of, you know, where the other ones had the odd sort of like little lull, you know, particularly towards the end and stuff. This one pretty much was strong I felt the whole way through.
Okay.
Now, actually going into this quite, I must say I wasn't expecting much. I wanted it to be really good, but when this character was in the Jessica Jones TV series, he never really sort of struck me as a character that I wanted to see a whole show built around. You know, he was very, to me, mild-mannered. I wouldn't quite say bland, but was sort of, you know, but there wasn't a lot of sort of, he wasn't like massively a load of charisma that I felt in the Jessica Jones ones. But in this series, he really got into the role. I mean, it was still sort of like had a quiet quality to him, but it was more like a sort of like a seething, restrained quality about him. Like, you know, sort of more cool, more sort of like, you know, but sort of like, you know, sort of, you know, really, really powerful, but sort of like, you know, trying to keep him in, himself in control the whole time. Another thing as well is that I didn't like him in Jessica Jones was his action scenes. They were almost sort of, in fact, to be honest, the whole Jessica Jones thing, I didn't think the action scenes were very good at all. Mm. They were very much sort of like pushing and shoving types of powers. In this one, he really got to use like the sort of the strength of his powers, but in a way that he was sort of like, not trying to like actually hurt people. It was trying to sort of, you know, but he would basically try to restrain people and stuff like that. And he just like, you know, the action scenes were absolutely, you know, phenomenal. He was very different from Daredevil, where it was all about like acrobatics and, you know, and sort of spectacular martial art moves. In this one, it was very much sort of like a powerhouse and sort of like, you know, there'd be sort of like, you know, gangs firing machine guns at him and stuff like that. And he basically just walked through all the bullets and sort of like, you know, knock people all over the place and use sort of like, you know, sort of, you know, heavy, like, you know, one scene, he like pulls a door off a car to use as a shield and then sort of wraps a villain in it. Just really creative, really stuff. But the whole series just had this sort of, it's hard to describe. It was basically, obviously, it's set in Harlem, and he just did a sort of a real good job of sort of like basing the whole tone around that. So you had a lot of sort of, I don't really know how you would sort of describe it, the music, but kind of like a soul type music, like soundtrack to it. There were lots of sort of like live music you'd see in sort of like this club that was a focal point to the whole story. This was sort of, you know, black singers and rappers and stuff like that. They sort of gave it this sort of like, you know, this like vibe about it. A lot of time they sort of like comments about the stuff that's been going on with sort of like police and sort of with the shootings and everything. Not sort of over heavy handed, but the influence of that was like, you know, really careful. This one was basically, it had like a really, a real edge to the whole series, and basically sort of like, you know, sort of, it created that sort of that street culture and that sort of, you know, really, really well. And there sort of was like a cast of characters, you know, around there. Just, for my show, you know, just a, you know, a really good quality, you know, show. And this was one where I didn't really expect or intend to sort of binge watch this. This was something where I'd expect I'd just sort of like watch, you know, maybe an episode or two a day or sort of, you know, when I got time. But I ended up watching it in 2 days, and it didn't feel like I was actually binge watching either. When I watched the other ones, I'd sort of get to a stage where I was starting to lag a little bit. With this one, I never felt that at all. You know, to be honest, at times it didn't really feel like I was even watching like a TV show. It just felt like I was watching a really, really long movie. You know, it was just a, you know, just a, you know, a real good show. Well, and lots of sort of twists along the way, but the story and sort of who you think is the story is going to be featured around as it went along would change, you know, at certain times. And it wasn't just like Luke Cage's story either. It was like, you know, Misty Knight cropped up as a character, and it was as much, her story was as much part of it as well, because she was doing all the police side and everything. And I think this one's been a really good success.
Okay. I've been kind of skeptical because I didn't finish just all of Jessica Jones, because I even felt like, I've heard from people who've watched the entire series said it's good, and I think I watched about maybe 3 episodes of it, but a lot of people, the consensus, I feel like it's too long. So from what you said about Luke Cage, it feels very short. It feels like a very long movie, so that's sort of reassuring. But also I was sort of skeptical because I'm just like, I've been reading comics for a while now. And whenever I think to do research on certain characters, it's not like there's Luke Cage as this character who's had all these great individual stories, all these great runs. The only person I know that's actually done something with Luke Cage has been Bendis. I mean, it's always been as an extension of the Avengers. Or even, you know, his tenure as a character in the Marvel Universe has been half of the Heroes for Hire. So when you said that you're going to make a Luke Cage solo series, I was just like, I don't know, dude. It's like, I understand the Netflix studio here. They can work their magic. They're really good when it comes to scripts and as well as, you know, all the special movie effects where they can put together a pretty decent show. But I'm like, Luke Cage may be the one that where it really tests them to see if. It kind of feels like, and I'm kind of worried about this as well with Iron Fist. I'm just like, it kind of feels like they're scraping at the bottom of the barrel for ideas. It's like, you couldn't think of anybody else. You couldn't think of a Moon Knight or someone that you could feature on a Netflix series like this. You had to stick to your guns. I know they had it planned for a while now, but it's like, you couldn't go with any other character. You couldn't go with a Blade. But,
I think the thing is, I personally sort of think that, I can sort of distance myself from the source material to the TV shows and the films and stuff like that. I don't think you necessarily have to have a character that's had classic storylines, you know, to do something with. And to be honest, in some ways, that kind of gives you freedom, you know, because you basically, if you've got a sort of character like Luke Cage, you can basically pretty much see it, but you've got your sort of your origin and what the character's about and everything, but it also gives you freedom to basically sort of, you know, do your own thing with that character. You know, it's like, for example, Ant-Man. Now, Ant-Man, I've never really read an Ant-Man story that I was basically blown away by. It was just basically just an Avenger as such. But when I saw the film, you know, the film was fine. It wasn't my favorite Marvel movie, but it was like a really entertaining film. And I think that with the TV shows, they can basically, you know, you've got the stuff like, so for example, you know, Daredevil, you've got all these great stories that you can go back to and everything. But, you know, if you can find a character who fits into, you know, that sort of like that street defender type thing that they're going for, you know, you've got the freedom then to basically sort of do what you want with. I mean, the Iron Fist one, they basically, you know, they could, just like this one was kind of like a very street, urban type, storyline to it. With the Iron Fist one, they could basically do this more of a martial arts type film, series, which is something that, to be honest, the comic whenever I read Iron Fist, although he was sort of like a martial artist, it never felt like you were reading a martial arts comic. It was a superhero comic with a guy who did martial arts. So they could do this on more along the lines of, say, like Master of Kung Fu, you know, just sort of, you know, doing something like that. So to me, I'm never really worried about, you know, the comic or the character that it's based on. You know, just sort of, all I want to see is like, you know, a good, TV, series out of this. It's kind of like when, I remember when Iron Man was the first film that they went with to do the Marvel Universe. And to be honest, Iron Man for years had not had any sort of classic storyline. It was just kind of like, you know, a character. And then they sort of like went back to his roots and sort of, you know, came up with, the storyline there. So, you know, that sort of thing doesn't really bother me. For me, so far, the thing that they've done with the Netflix thing, they've pulled everything out of the bag. They've done really well with it. So I'm actually looking forward to it, to an Iron Fist TV show, because just on my track record, I basically trust them to do something good and interesting with it.
But I'm saying that was another opportunity for them to do something different. Up until now, we had not really seen the buddy comedy movie. It'd be nice if they'd done something with that. Or I know I've heard things back and forth whether or not DC has slated for a Booster Gold and Blue Beetle series, or even Valiant, who's, you know, stepping up to the plate as far as cinematic things are concerned. I was kind of hoping they would have maybe gone with it as well, because considering they have so many teams as well, or so many duos, I should say. It's like something we haven't seen in quite a while from the superhero genre, so it'd be kind of refreshing if they did something like that. And that's not to say they can't do it down the road, but I'm just like, well, I'd much rather see that than Luke Cage by a Luke Cage series solo or Iron Fist solo.
But I'd say it's just, you know, pony up for Netflix for a month and give it a try. Because, again, like you said, now you've got the two characters. If after this series, after we've done the Defenders, if there's kind of some chemistry between Iron Fist and Luke Cage in the actual, in the Defenders or whatever, then they could go to the comedy. the buddy series or whatever, you know, because, you know, they can, there's no rush with these things, you know. It's one of these things that I think that if they'd have done an Iron Fist and Luke Cage series, people would probably then be saying, well, why didn't you do like two series first to, you know, present them? It's going to be such, you know, you're putting these two characters together and we don't know who they are. So, you know, there's always a different ways that you can do it. My personal thing is that, you know, so far what we're doing is working. They're working towards to having this sort of Defenders team up, and we'll take it from there. But, you know, to me, you know, this isn't, you know, they've got all the time in the world to do these series with, you know, so I'm perfectly happy with how they're doing things. Okay. We could get the buddy, you know, series, you know, later on.
Okay. Since we're talking all things comics already, I know you brought it up last week earlier, and I went the extra mile and I actually read it, but we're talking 2000 AD, the 2000s edition or 2000s issue of it came out this week. Guys, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, this was actually a quite a big deal. I mean, not sort of like in your mainstream media or anything like that, but as far as sort of as a comic event in the UK, this got a lot of publicity. Into the fact that yesterday, they were basically doing signings of the magazine up and down the country, or like, you know, simultaneously, where they would send sort of like artists and writers to various places. I'm just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think there's about 9 different places that they basically had signings on all around the company, all around the country at the same time. Unfortunately, none of them were actually anywhere near where I lived, sort of thing. But I've seen some of the photographs and stuff, and looked like they had massive, massive queues on. So I think they really did a good job, 2000 AD, of basically sort of, you know, promoting this, making it a really big deal, and also sort of like, you know, reminding old fans and new fans, you know, of the comic and everything. Because unfortunately, I find this really, really sad, because I basically grew up reading comics, and even before I sort of discovered Marvel and all the American stuff, comics was a big part of my life. And it was basically, you would go to like the what we call the news agents, which I don't know what your term would be for them. I guess the newsstands, as you call them. Mm-hmm. And there would just be like loads of comics just to choose from. There'd be adventure comics, there'd be sort of, you know, comedy comics, even girl comics specifically just for girls, comic strips for girls. They were just like it was such a great thriving industry. And now years and years later, there's basically the only one really which is a UK produced comic as I think of a comic to be is 2000 AD. All the others basically sort of, you know, died off and folded. If you got, you know, and for kids, growing up now, the only comics that they basically get apart from 2000 AD is there's sort of, I don't even refer to them as comics, they're more like activity, comics, which are basically just all sorts of like puzzles and sort of little like features and stuff like that. You don't get comic strips in them, and every single one is basically either a TV tie-in. There's always some sort of plastic free gift attached to them, but they're just not comics as I know them. The only other comics you can actually get nowadays, Commando, the war comic, is still going. I think it's mainly reprints of older issues, but there's also, you get the there's a company that does reprints of Marvel and DC comics monthly. And there's quite a lot of them where you get like about like 3 stories in one volume that comes out monthly. The sort of DC do them, Marvel do them. But for the actual, you know, the British comic scene, it is basically dead now apart from 2000 AD. And it's just so great to see it like, you know, hanging on in there. I've got to admit, it's the first time I've bought 2000 AD for quite a few years, to be honest.
I'm sure there was a lot of people who were like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to get it on the Wednesday, the day it came out, just to sort of, you know, because I was pretty sure that, you know, they would sort of, you know, a lot of people are going to buy it who haven't bought it for years or bought it at all. But it was just sort of great just to sort of have, you know, a British style comic of sort of like, which was like a compilation as opposed to just like, you know, the one story format that the you know, that the sort of, you know, of the Americans. And it was just sort of, you know, it was just how they actually did it was quite cool, because the thing about 2000 AD is they used to have like a fictional editor called Frog the Mighty. And he would basically like do the introduction page, and it, when they had the letters page, he would read the letters out and stuff like that. And they had a sort of, they had a gimmick where he basically walks through the comic to the various sort of dimensions where he says they get all the stories from. And it was just a cool, like, little device to actually sort of, you know, link all the stories together. And it was, you know, for me, it was just like a nice little sort of, you know, nostalgia thing. And I think from this point forward, I'm going to try and basically keep up with reading 2000 AD, you know, as, you know, basically to support a British comic, and also just to sort of, you know, see how it's, you know, because I think the problem with this sort of, with this format is if you basically only sort of, if you basically just try and dip in from time to time, it's quite hard to pick up and get attached to the stories. But if you sort of like, you know, read them constantly, you know, you sort of like, yeah, you know, I've bought a lot of the collected editions of the 2000 AD stories in the last few years. And they are some really good, you know, really great stuff that that even in like the 70s and 80s, years before the sort of, you know, the comic, you know, the Marvel and DC started to go with what we call the Dark Ages, when we go through the more gritty, more mature sort of storylines. 2000 AD was doing that just as a matter of course. You know, that was just, you know, what they were built on. They, you know, they were pushing the envelope out and that sort of thing. So, you know, it was nice to sort of like, you know, pick up 2000 AD again. And, I have to say, just, I might as well point this out as well. I sort of alluded to this, last week. I basically, on Half Guarded this week, I revisited the 2000 AD article I did for Comic Conversations, and I basically sort of updated it, expanded it in some ways, and it's shown up on Half Guarded this week as a three-parter. So it's basically three, which I wrote it as one, but Coughlin thought it was would be served better splitting it into three. So it was a bit, and it actually does, even though I didn't intend it to be like this, it does actually work, because one article, the first one, deals with the genesis of 2000 AD and what the comic scene was like and how it basically came around. The second article is pretty much just about Judge Dredd and about that character and everything. And the third article is basically just me going through some of my other favourites from the 2000 AD catalogue of characters and sort of, you know, what, you know, why they were sort of like, you know, important to me. So it's basically like a mini trilogy of 2000 AD delights.
I like your verbiage there, delights. That's cute. All right, since we talked about 2008,
what did you actually? You mentioned you bought it. What did you think of it? I'm curious. As someone who was actually American, you know, didn't basically grow up and didn't actually sort of know, you know, basically, you know, I would imagine that sort of format of a compilation comic is quite alien.
Actually, you know, not necessarily American true. Audience. There is, in fact, a series from Avatar Press. It's called Cinema Purgatorio, and it has it's very similar to this, but it's not nearly as in depth. It's an anthology series where you get sort of, I guess maybe it's a 5 to 6 pages worth of stories, and it's very similar to this. In fact, now that we're talking about 2000 AD, one of the writers on the series is in fact Alan Moore. So if you haven't already, Dazza, checked it out. If you want the American side of maybe an anthology book, and it's very similar to this, where several of the stories are in fact in black and white. In fact, now that I think about it, all the stories, I think are in black and white. So it's very similar to this. So something like this really isn't all that odd to me. I did like the idea that in 2000 AD, this specific issue, it was a lot more pages than I'm used to. I think it was about 50 pages, but I liked it better, even though it took more time to read, because all the stories were fleshed out a lot better. Whereas you read the stuff in the Cinema Purgatorio, and it's like you have 5, 6, 7, 8 pages tops to tell a very quick condensed story. This, I feel like they got more time. They could tell the stories that they wanted to. Obviously, I'm not really a good sample person to read this story in sort of in a vacuum, because I have read your articles before and I kind of know a little bit about 2000 AD as well as all the characters. But with that said, some of these characters I didn't know. Some of them felt like they were beginnings of stories that they were hoping people would start reading. Most of the stories I didn't much care for, or I felt like I didn't have a grasp on the material. The one story I absolutely love and I absolutely want to put over here is the Death of a Dream by Alan Grant. Are you familiar with the story, Dazza, from the anthology? It's the psychic from Judge Dredd, and she's being haunted by
the Judge Anderson one.
Yes.
Yes, yes, that was a really good one. Yeah, yeah.
Not only is it's again because it's an anthology, it's only a couple page story, but it's fine. That's all they need. It's a very simple story. You said Anderson, correct? Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. Yeah, Anderson.
Yeah, Judge Anderson.
She's dreaming, but her dreams are invaded by the Death Judge. Am I correct in that? That character is?
Judge Death.
She's being haunted by Judge Death, and it's sort of akin to Nightmare on Elm Street, where he invades her dreams and he's trying to kill her. And I wouldn't be doing myself a proper service of this review if I hadn't mentioned the art, because that's another thing. It's a very simple, great story, but at the same time, part of the reason why this story leapt above all the others, it had the fantastic art by David Roach. Don't get me wrong, most of the stories had fairly decent, if not okay, art. But the David Roach art in this story is absolutely phenomenal. This is one of those things to where I don't know if it would carry over as well when you would add color to this. But man, this is a great simple story. The Death Judge is trying to kill her in her sleep. Obviously, it's her dreams, and she's a psychic, so she's able to make quick work of him. She's able to hurt him and then eventually kill him. So it's a very simple story, but I like it and it works. And it's like I said, it's well written as well as well drawn.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the one with like the really strong like pencil vibe to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, but yeah, that was a good. Well, one of the highlight for me in it was and you mentioned about it being like sort of a new one, the counterfeit girl. The one at the end about the woman who's basically does the she kind of might be like the sci-fi punk type world where she's basically where she basically swaps bodies. She does a thing where she basically, you know, gives people new identities and new bodies and stuff. That I've never seen that series before, so I think that's a brand new series.
Yeah,
so,
I was excited for that one going in because I saw it was written by Peter Milligan, and obviously I'm sort of a comic newbie, but I've heard the name before. I'm currently reading a series with Alex at Comic Conversations called Britannia. That's a really good series. I was hoping maybe I could get a full feel of Peter Milligan with this story. And I was like, this is okay. It's a serviceable story. Maybe if I continue to read 2000 AD and get this story, I guess if I get more of the story, I may get into it. But just reading this one part of a story in the 2000 anthology, I was like, it's okay. It's fine. But the Judge Anderson story was really good. If you haven't already checked it out, I would recommend just picking it up. If not just for the sake of, you know, I read this and I've read several comics before and I just wanted to read it because it felt like a piece of history. It never felt like, well, this is a comic book from a different country and I sort of need to put myself in that mindset. No, I just told myself I'm reading a comic book. I'm reading an anthology. It's a landmark issue, but at the same time, it never occurred to me that I'm reading an English book.
But yeah, I mean, for me, it was just sort of nice to basically sort of read, you know, a British comic again. I'm going to give it a go. But the cool thing about the British comics as well is, although you only get like about maybe 7 or 8 pages of story per story, you actually get the British comics out rather than monthly; they're all weekly. So you know, by the time of 4 weeks have gone by, you've pretty much got the same sort of like length of story as you would be if you bought like an American Marvel comic. So that's another thing that I always used to love. Mondays used to be one of my favorite days of the week when I was a kid. Cause that's when the comics used to come through the letterbox. Cause my parents used to basically let me like order one comic a week to be delivered as a weekly. So that was always like a sort of like a nice thing, but coming through with the newspapers. So that was always a great thing.
Okay. From there, let's talk all things cinema with, you told me there was an update with the Transformers movie. And I have to hear about this considering all the stuff I heard prior up to this point.
Okay. Well, this thing's kind of just getting like batshit crazy. Basically, we spoke the other week how it looks like there's sort of like a time travel thing going on because they go back to the King Arthur times. Well, this week it emerged that it looks like there's going to be even more time travel, and it looks like we could get Transformers versus Nazis because there's basically been some photographs, release, which basically shows sort of like, you know, Nazi flags and stuff like that. There's not actually been any sort of like mentions of story as such, but it looks like there is going to be sort of a World War II type thing in the Transformers, in the next Transformers movie, which was really bizarre, and it's turned a few sort of like, it turned a few heads with this, is that they actually did some filming at Winston Churchill, basically the home of the Winston Churchill estate. Oh, and what they did is they actually had Nazi flags
over
the out of it.
Wonderful.
Now, this has caused a little bit of a stir with certain sort of groups in the UK. We have a few sort of like veterans group and stuff. Now, I don't know if this is basically an idea that there's going to be some sort of like tinkering with time element. A Days of Future Past, where there's basically somebody's gone back in time and done something that causes the Germans to win the war or something like that. So I don't know if that's the case. But yeah, to actually, if it's not, to actually go to Winston Churchill's sort of like stately home and basically draw a bit in like Nazi memorabilia is kind of a little disrespectful, you would think. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's a kind of be like sort of going and going to like, I don't know, Abraham Lincoln's home and putting like sort of like Ku Klux Klan memorabilia out the front or something. I don't know, but apparently Michael Bay is, there's a quote from Michael Bay sort of defending what he'd done, and he was kind of a bit of rambling, but it gave the impression that Winston Churchill is actually going to feature in this film, because he was talking about, you know, you've not seen the script yet and everything, so you don't know how Winston Churchill actually comes across in this film, and you know how he comes across as a hero, which leads me to think, are we going to get Winston Churchill in the film? Are we going to get Hitler in the film? It's, you know, because this is just going to be batshit crazy. I mean, I personally said, and I think said when we talked about this originally, I was not going to go see this film, because I went to see My history of the Transformer movies, obviously I loved the cartoon film, that's great. The first Transformer live action film I actually really enjoyed. The second one I thought was awful. There was too much really, really bad comedy, too many annoying humans and everything. Too many, even for me, racist depictions of Transformers and Transformers with you know, testicles and stuff like that. The third one I thought was okay. There was a lot wrong with it, but I thought it was, you know, watchable as sort of like a big loud action movie. The fourth one I will attest that it was basically one of the worst films I have ever seen. And I will say that wholeheartedly. So this one I didn't want to go see, but now it's getting to a stage where you kind of think this could be so sort of absolutely nuts with the stuff that we're going. Like, it might be a must-see film just to sort of like, you know, see, you know, what this is all about. I've got to admit, if there's an idea of sort of Transformers turning into sort of like Spitfires and stuff like that, that could be sort of, that might get me to sort of take a look, or Optimus Prime shooting Hitler. You know, so something like that maybe it'll work, but I don't know. It just seems to be just like,
correct me if I'm wrong, Dazza, but didn't they have in those movies, didn't they have Transformers that could turn into people? Are you following my line of logic here?
Yeah, because in the second one there was this there was basically a Transformer that was disguised as a really hot woman, because it's a Michael Bay film, so, you know, so you've got to do that. But yeah, she was like kind of, leopard Transformer was basically had a human skin on it, so she looked human. So basically what you're saying is you could have a Hitler Transformer.
Yeah!
That could work. I had not thought of that. No. They could be a Hitler Transformer.
The response to that should not be Dazza. Oh, you think you could do that? No, you should be like, Tony, that's a terrible idea. You should feel bad.
No, I bet you that's what, I would not be surprised if that's what we're going to do.
It wouldn't surprise me either.
No.
But it's like, that sounds, I mean, it sounds goofy as an idea, sort of like we're just spitballing ideas, but if that's the way to decide to go, whew.
But look, I mean, look, when you've got to this stage where you're going to have Optimus Prime meeting King Arthur and taking the sword out of the stone type thing, I think you've already basically gone past the point of no return of anything making sense. Just go nuts with this shit.
Just Hitler and a Decepticon. have all the German tanks be members of the Decepticons as well.
And the Fokkers and everything that the Germans planes.
The Japanese Zeros can be like Skyscream and everybody else.
But the thing is, what gets me is you've got this sort of storyline going on. Michael Bay, for the first three Transformers movies, was saying, oh, we can't do the Dinobots because it's just so implausible to actually bring the Dinobots into the 21st century. There's no way you can do it. It's like, really? And now they're going on with all this crazy shit.
Hey, maybe that'll be their way into incorporating it.
Well, we had the Dinobots in the last one, but apparently we're going to have mini Dinobots in this one, so I don't know how that's going to work. But yeah, this is.
Oh, and for you Transformers purists, correction, Starscream. I'm sorry. I'm sure we're going to get emails.
What did you say?
I said Skyscream.
Well, there is a Skywarp.
Yeah, but there's no character named Skyscream. And I'm sure we're going to have Transformers purists jumping down my throat, so it's okay. I just wanted to be lean them off at the pass, so I don't want to have to deal with that confrontation.
What I want to know is when they get to the King Arthur times, how they're actually going to get around because there's no roads.
This is true. This may be a problem for old Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
I guess they'll cross that road when they get to it.
Yeah.
All right. Since we're talking all things movies already, you know what time it is, Dazza. It's time for Rate and Slate. And last week we left off with 1991, so it only makes sense for us to go with 1992's top 10 movies. According to TKO170.com, these are the top 10 performing films of 1992. And at number 10, the comedy classic Wayne's World. At number 9, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Already you can see this is sort of very similar to last week. It's a very stacked lineup. Number 8, the Whoopi Goldberg classic Sister Act. I'm sure when we get her. Well, go ahead, Daz. What were you going to say?
Nope, didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. Sorry. There, you say something. At number 7, and I'm sure when we come to Best Picture picks, A Few Good Men. Number 6, the sequel to the Batman movie, Batman Returns. Number 5, Lethal Weapon 3. Number 4, Basic Instinct. Number 3, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Number 2, The Bodyguard. And at number 1 for 1992 films, I should say, correct myself a little bit, Aladdin. I can look at this bunch of films, and obviously you have stingers like Basic Instinct, and I've never seen Lethal Weapon 3, but I have to imagine once you get to the third movie, it can't be particularly good, especially with a series like this. But with that said, these are all notable films. And I do not envy Dazza as well as myself when it comes to rate.
Okay. You know what? I got to say something.
Okay.
I'm not enamored with this list.
Really?
I think most of it is kind of things, films which I think are okay. There's nothing on this list that I out and out love, to be perfectly honest.
Batman Returns, Dazza? Come on.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is my rate is going to be Batman Returns.
Okay, but we've demonstrated before in the past, you do not have to exercise. We've done it before in the past where we haven't exercised our slate. The opposite can work as well, Dazza. If you don't want to pick a rate, I mean, I'm not going to twist your arm here.
Well, no, I mean, I will pick Batman Returns because I really did like it, love it as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really liked it. And there were certain bits of it that I absolutely loved. I wasn't a fan of the original Batman film, but this one, I think I absolutely did love the characters, as in the Penguin and Catwoman. I just thought the thing is, they're nothing like their counterparts in the comic. at all. They're nothing like that. But they gave them their own sort of, like, you know, they totally redid their origins. They totally made them different characters. And it just fitted in great with the kind of the Tim Burton universe. I think the thing why I like this one more than the original Batman one is that the original one kind of felt a bit awkward, whereas this one was, it seemed to be about Tim Burton. It just got a, it was able to do the sort of things that he wanted to do in this one and create this totally, totally gothic story. Not just the actual, you know, Gotham City itself as this sort of gothic environment, but he managed to make the characters fit in well with that, you know, and this sort of like this kind of really like spooky sense about them, particularly with the Penguin. It's a really weird Batman film in the fact that Batman's not really in it that much. He doesn't seem. The actual storyline, the story arcs are basically, you know, Catwoman's and the Penguin's. They both have got the two separate storylines going on at the same time. Batman really doesn't have much of an arc in this. He's more like a sort of, you know, like the, he's almost like a plot device to basically sort of like, you know, be the sort of the antagonist and everything. But yeah, of the, you know, of the films on this list, this is the one that I would, you know, really, really go for is Batman Returns. I just sort of, you know, I like the look of it and the, you know, the sort of like, you know, the tone of it and the characters. Michelle Pfeiffer in that cat suit, let's face it, she was pretty hot. Yeah, so that is the one that I would go for.
Yeah, and I'm sort of going to piggyback off to you without, I guess, honorable mentions to Wayne's World. Obviously, this is a film I probably would have gone with in any other year. It's probably my rate, but you have so many good movies that I like. Aladdin as well, the movie I watched growing up, and I'm not going to pick it for my rate, but still an absolutely timeless classic film. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, another good film. And then again, some films I've never, not necessarily seen, like The Bodyguard. But then also good films that I have seen, like Dracula and what's the other one? I saw A Few Good Men. So you look at this lot of films, and there's very, with the couple of exceptions, there are very few bad picks in the bunch. And I'm looking over this list because we've done this before in other years where there's sort of been notable entries. At number 2, they're 13, Unforgiven. Number 14, Under Siege. Let's see what else. At number 17, A League of Their Own. Lots of good films that weren't necessarily in our top 10. Let's see what other movies here. Hoo-ah! And at number 24, Scent of a Woman. Hoo-ah! Ooh, number 27, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
There's The Crying Game. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I have not. How's
You've
that?
Not seen, no. Do you know the twist?
No, I don't.
You should watch it.
You don't want to spoil it for me?
I'm not gonna spoil it. You should watch that film.
Okay. Beethoven at number 30.
31. Malcolm X.
31,
way
my
down
cousin
on the list, but Malcolm X.
My Cousin Vinny.
That's a good film.
Yeah, I know. See?
He is so funny in that film.
We'll do Rate and Slate for our top 10, but then we'll go casually look over the
other
movies in the top 50. The Muppet Christmas Carol, Stop and My Mom Will Shoot, Three Ninjas, sort of grew up watching that. There was another film I want to mention before we very briefly move on. The Mighty Ducks. So
you have to mention the classic horror film on that list.
Are you talking about Candyman?
Yeah.
It's terrible. As someone
Do you like that film?
I can appreciate it, and I like it. It's sort of a spooky film, but at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and try to defend it.
Really? Oh, that surprises me. I thought,
Oh, speaking of that, I mentioned this before. This came out a couple years ago, but it recently made its way to Netflix, and I recently watched it again. But the Nightmare on Elm Street documentary, Never Sleep Again, that's amazing. I know you're not a big fan of the series, Dazza, but if you're a fan of movie documentaries, I would recommend going out of your way to watch that, at least a little bit of it, because it's very good and it's really very well done.
I do actually love movie documentaries, so I'll give that a shot.
Assuming it's not region locked.
Just something about Candyman, but my recollection. I saw Candyman. I was a student at the time, and we used to be a film society. But we were would show a different film every week. It was almost like having a little cinema night on the grounds of the campus. And they basically, Let's just say that the sound equipment wasn't like basically massively, massively high tech, but it was like speakers in the ceiling and everything. When they showed Candyman, whenever he talked with that big booming voice, the speakers actually started shaking.
Ooh, nice.
Out of the ceiling. And we all basically, and it actually at one point, people actually were moving because it looked like it was actually going to sort of shake clear. The bass on his voice was so strong. It was basically in danger of basically tearing the speakers from the ceiling.
Whoa.
And there's Malcolm X on there as well, which is another classic.
I feel like we're mentioning all these great films. It's kind of an awkward transition. Now we have to pick our slates.
Yeah. But you've not picked your age yet. Are you not going to pick one?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to hang myself there. There's a reason why for that, Dazza, because I'm going to agree with you with your rate as well. Oh, okay. I'm going to go with Batman Returns. I think it's a classic film. People say it's the one Batman film as far as the two Tim Burton films that really holds up to the test of time. I like the original one. I recently saw it again on Netflix. I feel like it maybe not necessarily holds up. I still think it's a fairly decent outing. It's a fairly decent film. So when people bury it, I'm sort of there to defend it. I'm like, it's a pretty good film. Whereas Batman Returns is sort of the one that everybody can agree is a very good Batman film. It does, in fact, hold up. A couple of questionable castings, but for the most part, a fairly decent outing. Not until I think we got Dark Knight that this was probably far and away the best Batman film that had come out to this point.
Oh yeah, Batman. For some reason, I always found a bit in that hysterical where they're at the mayor's press conference and a guy comes up in like this clown jester outfit and just does a somersault and he just grabs the baby. The mayor's baby, and then just goes to the microphone and just holds him like he would like a little award and just say, I just want to say thank you. And then like just like runs off with the baby into the sewer. For some reason, I always found that really funny. Probably something that people don't find that funny nowadays with all this clown hysteria that's going on in America.
And I think people can appreciate that in the vacuum. That's kind of a big story, but I don't know if it's as big. The fact that you're bringing it up, maybe it's bigger than I thought it'd be. But
I keep getting little bits of it on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. So is this actually a thing that's happening, or is it just kind of like an urban type myth?
It's a thing, but it's more so it's a serious story, but a lot of people are still laughing at it because it is funny, but at the same time they are doing these really, I guess in some instances, these horrible things. So it's funny, but then the real life implications of it kick in and it's not as funny.
No. Okay. Kids being kidnapped is never quite funny, but you know.
It depends on the kid, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, this is going to be a hard task for me because a lot of these films I'm not a big fan of. Some of these I've never seen, but I don't know. There's none of these films that really stick out to me that I'm like, well, this is a real stinker when we're doing our slate. So, Daz, I'm curious what you're going to go with your slate for this
year. Well, mine's quite easy, actually, because there's a film in this that I absolutely can't stand, and that is A Few Good Men. I really hate this movie. I think the reason it's... I think the reason why I dislike it, I just think there's, and to be honest, I don't really get why, because this is a film that shows up on like the top 100 lists sometimes, and I don't get why it is. I think the sort of the story is fine, is just fine for its time, but I think there's just like two really really poor casting choices. I think Tom Cruise, I just don't think he's any good in this one. And it sounds like I've got a thing against Tom Cruise because I think last time I sort of picked there was another time I picked a Tom Cruise sort of something to slag off. I just don't. And Tom Cruise, I think he's good in certain films around this time. I think he was sort of, I think he was great in Top Gun. I think he was great in Jerry Maguire. Rain Man, I thought he was great in this one as a military lawyer. I just don't get him in this film. I just don't get it. And Demi Moore as well. I just found her, really, really poor in this film. The two of them together, I think, just brought this film down. I think there's some other great performances in it. I think Kevin Bacon's great in it. I think, Jack Nicholson obviously is amazing and he does that massive speech. I think, for me, I think Jack Nicholson is the one that basically sort of carries this that everyone remembers as being great, especially when he does that whole sort of, monologue about, you know, being on the wall and everything, and how they stand on the line and stuff. I think he's great in it, but for the film as a whole, I just don't, you know, really get. I think Tom Cruise, when he's in the same scenes as Jack Nicholson, I think is frankly, it's kind of a bit embarrassing, you know, for how I sort of, you know, watch it. And there's also this really, really bad scene in it where Tom Cruise is drunk and he goes on this massive rant, and it's just like this. When I watched it, I just thought, I just found it cringe worthy. You know, but that's me. But yeah, I just, this is a film that I just don't get the love for.
It may be that one scene between Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise what people feel the need to put this movie on a pedestal. But I think it's a fairly decent outing. But yeah, when people mention the best films of all time, I'm sort of there with you. I don't get it, but at the same time, I still think it's a good film. All right. For my slate, I think I'm again going to exercise my option and not pick one, because, you know, I'm not a big fan of Basic Instinct. It's not a good film by any stretch of the imagination. But usually I feel like the slate thing should be exercised for a really bad movie that I feel passionately about. And it's, since Never Say Never Again, I haven't felt that passion to crucify a film. And
I have to say, if A Few Good Men wasn't on this list, I would have chosen Basic Instinct, because that's going to really, because I saw this a few years back. It was on TV and I watched it for a bit. It's got a really, I don't know, it's like a really distasteful, not just the actual film itself, but the way it's shot and the way it looks and everything. It's just got this like really oily, disgusting feel to it. Even in the scenes where there's not the sort of, because let's face it, the big selling point of this film was the whole thing of Sharon Stone basically not having any underwear on when she's got the dress on, where she crosses her legs and everything. And it was just so sort of, you know, I'm not against, you know, sex or sexy movies or anything, but this was so sort of hard on the nose. It was just sort of pushed so much on based on that, and the whole thing that she's like, she's a lesbian, but she's a hot lesbian. You know, you get to see lesbian sex scenes and stuff like that in this, that they sort of went with. It just, the whole sort of thing about it was very much the 50 Shades of Grey of its day, but sort of more geared towards a male audience. So it was more of a sort of like, kind of just had an ugly vibe about it, but the film as a whole, you know, I really hated, you know, the twist at the end was garbage, and the fact that you've got a lead character who basically sort of pretty much rapes somebody in the film, you know, that's not a film I have basically fond memories of, shall we say.
Yeah, I guess sort of we need to go over the fact that these aren't necessarily top 10 films according to like movie critics and whatnot. These are the top 10 performing films for 1992. These are the movies that had the best box office. So,
which shows that the marketing campaign sadly worked, because it was basically the number four film of that year in terms of box office thing.
Okay, with that out of the way, I already have it in front of me, so I'd be spoiling myself. And Daz, I don't know if you've already seen it, but what do you think Juan Pix picture in 1993 for films that came out in 1992?
I haven't looked, but I'm going to have a punt and say Unforgiven.
Are you sure you didn't look?
No, I didn't look.
Yeah, that's what Juan Pix picture, Daz.
Oh, okay. I just remember that basically, this one was a film that, you know, basically a lot, you know, was like a, you know, a really big rave about film, you know, and I personally loved it. It's one of my favorite westerns.
Ooh, okay.
You know, I think it's, you know, a really, really great film. So that was just the one on the film on the list that I sort of remember having a lot of buzz about it for being like, you know, a really, really class film. That's a good Oscar choice, that one.
Okay, moving from the best to the best, let's move on to the worst of the worst with the 13th annual Golden Razzies Award. I'm going to name out the nominations for Worst Picture, and Dazza, you have to do your best to try to figure out who won Worst Picture. At number one, we have The Bodyguard from Warner Brothers. At number two, we have Christopher Columbus, The Discovery. I can't imagine that being any good. Number three, Final Analysis. Number four, Shining Through. And number five, Newsies.
Newsies?
Yep. From Disney.
Never heard of that one.
I believe that is the film based off the musical about, I think it was newspaper writers going on strike, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
it was a bunch of newspaper boys going on strike. There we go.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna, basically, I've never seen it, but I would, Christopher Columbus doesn't sound promising, so I'm gonna go with Christopher Columbus.
You would be incorrect, Azza. I'm doing my research now on the worst film of this year that won the Golden Razzies for the worst film, but it'd be Shining Through. With the tagline, he needed to trust her with his secret. She had to trust him with her life.
Okay, right. I don't know that film, but what's that about?
I'm looking over this right now.
While you're looking at it, I will save it, because I always have to confess if I actually like one of the films or think one of this is bogus. And I personally think The Bodyguard. I would defend The Bodyguard. I don't think that is a that bad of a film, frankly. It's, you know, I think it's a fairly. When you consider the fact that you've got a leading woman who's not a natural actress in it, who's basically a singer, I thought she did fine. You know, Whitney Houston, I thought she did fine in it. And I thought it was, it's still a great film, but I thought it was decent, decent film. It's got a good, I've got to say, it's got a good soundtrack as well. Actually, earlier this year, I went to see The Bodyguard musical and, had a really great time. So, So that's, I would disagree with The Bodyguard.
Well, we've seen this before in the Razzies, where it really comes off as sort of a catty award sometimes. It's like they'll pick on a film that's not necessarily worthy of, but they'll just pick on it because it's popular.
I have to say, because sometimes we go through the other list. If they basically choose any of the songs from the Bodyguard as the worst songs, I think I am calling bullshit on that.
Do you want me to, get ahead of myself and spoil it for you?
No. Tell me what the tell me what Shining Through's. Actually, I'll try and find it.
It's sort of a dry premise. It's a international lawyer and an operative from the Office of Strategic Services. It's a pre-World War II romance film, but then it also deals with all the stuff that happens in World War II.
I've just pulled it up. Yes, I know this one. It's the Melanie Griffiths and Michael Douglas. Okay, I remember seeing it. This film is dull. This film, when I was a student, sharing a house with two women.
Nice.
And yeah. it wasn't like that.
Aww.
But it was let's just say that their movie tastes were very they weren't like mine, put it that way. They were basically into sort of serious sort of drama stuff, but they weren't into blockbusters, but they weren't into at the time, I was really, really getting into movies and experimenting with my taste and finding foreign films and, sort of independent films and stuff like that. And just sort of, action, like Hong Kong action movies and stuff like that, and experimenting. They seem to be into like really, really dull dramas, and they basically would rent, when we would sort of like have a video night in, they basically rent these really dull films. And this was one of them. I remember this one, and this was just a film that was just really, really dull and dire, and just sort of have this miserable feel about it. So yeah, I remember this one, and yeah, I did not have good times with it. I used to have to wait for everyone to go to bed so I could basically watch films like The Killer, or, Quentin Tarantino, you know, type rip-off type films and stuff, and you know, watch all the watch all the sort of the good stuff.
Well, most men would watch pornography at night, but Dazza watches great films.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to very quickly go over all the award winners. Speaking of Shining Through, there was a tie for Worst Actress, Melanie Griffin in Shining Through, and A Stranger Among Us Oh, she won them both. Because she also won for portraying Linda Voss. Wait, let's see. There you go. That was the character. What was the name of the character in Shining Through? Well, either way, she won the movie for both films, for A Stranger Among Us and Shining Through.
I'm just looking through the list at the same time as you are, and Whitney Houston. I think that's unfair. Whitney Houston getting the Worst Actress Award because she was fine in it. She wasn't great.
Well, she was nominated, but she didn't win. So I guess
but she was sort of nominated. It's, I think that's unfair because she was basically there because they needed an actress who could basically be like a pop star. And sing, you know, legitimately. So she was there more as a singer and stuff. I thought she was fine in it.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson got nominated
for two movies, in Hoffa and Man Trouble. There you go.
Oh.
And the actor that wanted that and that going would be Sylvester Stallone in Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, which for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But it's going back to the Bodyguard, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, that's unfair. They seem to have a thing about Kevin Costner. This was when Kevin Costner was basically on the, he'd had the sort of highs and when he was sort of, and now he was on the sort of like, you know, he was like a marked man at this point.
He was on the ropes.
Yeah.
what better time to kick a guy is than when he's down because he can't fight back? Worst supporting.
Danny DeVito got nominated for Worst Supporting Actor. Who are these people?
Who are these people? Who are the ad widgets that came up with this? Going to Worst Original Song. Whitney Houston was nominated for Queen of the Night, but she did not win. And sort of going to, no, there's nothing really that I can sort of defend. Oh God, Dazza, what is it?
If this is what I,
if... oh Jesus Christ!
Okay,
you're building it up at this point, and it better deliver, right. Dazza.
Worst new star. Sharon Stone's Beaver.
Okay, that's pretty great.
Hey, I've got to say though, it was a draw. I mean, look where it, you know, look where Basic Instinct was on the top 10s. It sort of, and that was the selling point of the film. Oh God.
That is pretty funny though, Dazza.
Yeah.
Fine work there. Fine work.
Yeah.
Really pulling your weight with that gag.
Oh God. Okay, let's move on.
Pun intended? Question mark. All right. Since we're talking all things movies already, Dazza, have you been watching any movies as of late that are worth noting?
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, every week. It's every week with you. One of these weeks, it'd be surprising. It's like. There'd be a week where you haven't seen a film, but it's every single week. Because is this because of your movie pass that you have?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I get full value. I've done really well this month actually. For the month of September, the amount of times I've been to the cinema, I think it would have cost me over £100 normally, and it only cost me like 15. So you know, it's good value. This week I saw three films this week. I went to see Magnificent Seven, mm-hmm. which really the only thing I can say about this was just basically a fun film. You know, it wasn't sort of, you know, a blow away classic or anything like that. It was just really, really fun. It was just sort of, you know, it was a lot sort of, you know, And I'm going to sort of compare this to the original and not Seven Samurai, because to me this is a remake of The Magnificent Seven. Magnificent Seven was a remake of Seven Samurai. This is a cowboy film, so this was a remake of Magnificent Seven. I'm just putting that out there. It wasn't as subtle as The Magnificent Seven, because all the characters were more, rather than like them being characters, they also had their own gimmick. So all seven of them. So like one was like the Indian. One was like the gambler. Another one was like the strong guy. Another one was like the sharpshooter. Another one was the criminal. They all have a sort of gimmick as opposed to being like sort of like, you know, actual characters with motivations and stuff. But it was just like, you know, a fun action film. It was one of these. It did get a bit ridiculous at the end during the big battle, because every single time that one of the heroes fire the gun, they hit somebody. every single time they would basically fire and a bad guy would get killed straight away. It was just sort of laughable, but it was kind of like watching Hawkeye and Bullseye, you know, the guys who never miss in a Western setting. It got to a bit where it was just hysterical. But, you know, as a fun action film, I really enjoyed it. Really had a great time with it. Even Hawk, to me, was the standout guy. You know, his character and his personality and everything, it really sort of shone through on this. His character was absolutely, absolutely great. And I have to say as well, sometimes when you're watching a film, you just get an idea that the actors are sort of just having an absolute ball making this film. And that sort of came across in this. It just seemed to be that everyone it wasn't the greatest script or greatest film, but everybody in there was basically putting their all into it and really making this, you know, a fun experience, as opposed to when you sort of watch somebody like Jennifer Lawrence be in a film that you can tell she doesn't want to be in, or Bruce Willis, who's another one, who basically, when he's in a film, is just basically practically just talking through it. I'll give them credit. All the actors just seem to be giving everything and absolutely having an absolute blast making this film. So, you know, that was a really fun film to see. I went to see The Infiltrator, which, if you're not aware what film that is, it's basically, if you've ever seen the TV show Narcos, which is on Netflix, which, incidentally, I binged watched the second series a couple of weeks back. That's an amazing series. You know, it's sort of, if you're basically going to get Netflix for Luke Cage, also check out Narcos, because that's just an incredible TV series set about the sort of the fight to bring that the DEA had to bring down Pablo Escobar. Well, if you don't know who he was basically just this massive drug kingpin from Colombia. Absolutely great TV show. This was set around the same sort of thing. This was more basically, this was like Bryan Cranston, who basically went undercover to try and track down the money people who were funding Volvo's operations. Really good film, not spectacular at times. It was only so much that you had to watch the whole thing before you basically came away and sort of said, you know, that was, you know, a good film. There's a lot of tension in it, because there were a lot of things, because he was obviously undercover with all these like really dangerous people, and it was these sort of things where they kept every so often something would happen that looked like it was basically blowing his cover, like he was out with his wife on lunch and they ran into this guy who was basically the part of the gang who he'd infiltrated, and he just had to change his entire personality to fit in with the guy he was pretending to be. So it was a really sort of tense thriller in many ways, actually based on a true story as well. But that was, it had Bryan Cranston in it as the lead actor. Really, really good. Again, not spectacular, but I know a film I really, really enjoyed. The highlight of this week, and one which was a complete surprise how much I actually liked it, was a film called The Girl with All the Gifts, which is actually sort of like a horror type zombie movie. I have to say, it's not that I sort of dislike zombie movies, but I kind of sort of don't get that excited about it, basically because there's so many of them. And a lot of them sort of go along the same sort of ground, because I saw World War Z the other week, and again, that was really, really good, but it was sort of, it's just the same sort of zombie film that you get with all the others. You just sort of, you know, you just sort of like get a bit sort of burnt out with them. This was a really good one though. It really sort of did something different with the whole genre. This was set around, basically for a start, in this one, the zombie apocalypse had already hit. And this was basically set around this sort of like a military base where they got these kids who basically had something to do with what was going on outside, but you were basically let in on what was happening, you know, quite gradually. So it was kind of like a really spooky mystery what thing from start with. And it was just like it obviously ended up being basically sort of like this squad basically end up sort of outside the base in the sort of like, you know, surrounded by zombies and everything. Really, really good film. Really did a lot of really good stuff with it. Made the sort of, you know, the zombies sort of, it just did something really, really different with it. For a start, most of the sort of, the main characters who were sort of the, you know, the zombies, a lot of them were sort of like, they focused on the ones who actually were kids. And I don't want to give too much away about why that was, but it just had sort of about a bit more of a sort of like a spooky feel to the whole thing. But that was like a really, really surprising movie. And out of the three I've seen, that's go see Magnificent Seven, but you know, go to see, you know, Girl with All the Gifts, because that was like, you know, a really, really surprising one. And a couple other films, just to sort of very briefly just throw these out there. I saw another couple of DC animated movies.
Ooh, nice.
This week, because I've said this so many times that the DC animated movies are just, for me, out of this world. If they could sort of get the actual, you know, just whatever they have with the animated films into the live action ones, they'd be blowing away Marvel at this moment. The two I saw, one of them was the Wonder Woman animated movie.
That's the one I'm curious on. I was like, how was that? Because I've seen that before, and I think the only capacity I have to see that movie is through a physical DVD, and I was sort of shy to pull the trigger on that. So I'm curious to how that was.
Yeah. I really thought it was great. It was basically just did the Wonder Woman origin story, you know. So, but how it told it, it just told it really, 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 really well. And you know, just sort of and this is the thing with these DC movies as well. Some of them, even though they're animated, they basically don't cut back on the violence. In fact, this was a lot more violent than I actually thought a Wonder Woman origin story would be, because it starts with sort of like a battle with her Amazon people. And there's like, in the first few minutes, there's like beheadings and people, you know, getting, you know, run through with swords and everything. Just, you know, just a really, really brutal start to the film. But generally speaking, I really enjoy this film. Had a lot of humor as well. It had, this is another thing about these, the DC ones, is we always get like some good actors to do the voices. They said Nathan Fillion in it as the guy who basically crashes on Wonder Woman's island. And his character was hilarious. You know, he had all these sort of like, you know, these, just be sort of like, you know, one-liners and stuff, and he would argue with Wonder Woman. Just really, really entertaining. I personally thought this was one of the best ones I've seen. And like I said, I pretty much enjoyed most of the DC movies. You know, so this one, you know, was a really, really good one. I also saw another one, Superman versus the Elite.
Ooh, that's a really good story. That's based off of – here, get this, Dazzle. This is based off a single issue of Action Comics by Mark Waid.
Really?
Yeah, because usually what you see, a lot of these animated films, they're based off of, I guess you would say, either a graphic novel or a certain run of a comic book. I read this because my buddy Alex on Comic Conversation recommended this when we had a slow week of comic books. So we all suggested a book, and this is the one that Alex suggested. It's one single issue, and they tell, I would say 90%, it's, for the most part, the exact same story.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have got to admit, I've not actually heard of it, because, like you just said, they base them on sort of like, you know, sort of like, either famous or good, you know, comic ones. A lot of the Batman ones are based on them. And I think that's why they've probably sort of come across so strong in the storylines, whereas Marvel, they kind of tend to write their own stories for the animated things, and they're never as good, whereas these, you know, these sort of work. I'd never even heard of this story, and I got really, really into it. You know, the idea of this sort of like this super group who basically are a more 21st century set of heroes with their own sort of like, sort of, you know, their own code, as it was. I absolutely loved as well the character Manchester Black. Again, I'd not heard of him, but his character was just awesome. I absolutely loved it. Also had and I forgot the lady's name, but it had one of my favorite Lois Lane interpretations that they've ever had. Mm-hmm. Because it had the girl who she plays Abby in the NCSI TV series. Abby's like the goth one who does all the forensic.
I'm very familiar. Yeah.
She's basically the one who, during NCSI, they basically spend 40 minutes investigating stuff, and then they decide to go to Abby, and Abby basically just tells them who did it. That's basically what every episode of NCSI is like. But yeah, Paula Perrette's the name. And it was one of my favourite interpretations of Lois Lane ever. She used to have this, like, sort of really sort of, I don't know, this kind of sort of, this kind of like a sort of, this like sarcastic, really sort of, a fiery way about her, which I think has sort of been missing from a lot of the Lois Lane type interpretations of her. You know, they always sort of seem to have her as that, this sort of, you know, the nice, classy, you know, lady. In this one, she was a bit more of a sort of, you know, a bit more fire to her, which I really, really like. But yeah, again, that was another really, really good film. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd be doing myself a disservice if I didn't correct myself. It's by Joe Kelly, and it's based off Action Comics 775. Yeah, this series was sort of an answer to everything that was happening in the early 2000s with the Authority being super popular. I guess this was sort of the Superman answer to that. Just the idea of the superhero team that kills, and this Superman comic focuses on that Superman trying to be his own classic way, trying to I guess go against the superhero group that acts that way.
Yeah, it was really good as well. Cause it had that sort of like that subplot where the population were basically sort of getting behind more of the elite. Because they were sort of being seen as to get things done. Even though they were trampling on people's rights and stuff, they were seen to be having more of an effect in getting things done. You know, so you had that sort of like going on in the background. So I thought it was like, you know, a really, really cool story.
Yeah. Okay. That's worth checking out, because it's in fact a very good animated movie there. Since we're talking all things superhero, have you been reading anything as of note as well?
I've been pretty much reading the same sort of stuff that I normally get. The sort of like, you know, the one thing that I did get that was a bit different. I got a run of Justice League comics on the new the 52 series that's been going. Not 52, Rebirth.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I have to admit, the reason why I sort of did that is I noticed a. There was like I forgot what they call it, but basically one of the catalogue type magazines that basically shows you all the upcoming comics which are coming. And one thing that caught my eye is that in December there's going to be a Suicide Squad versus Justice League storyline, which I don't care what anyone says, I'm gonna love the shit out of this. It just that to me is like, this is like old school versus you know, comics. You know, two basically popular teams, you know, well known, are basically gonna go at it for a few months, and I think that's just gonna be great. You know, so I basically got the I thought I'd catch up with the Justice League, see what the Rebirth ones are all about, and it had one of these stories that I kind of just, it was fine, but it was just one of these where I was like reading it, I'm thinking, I have no really idea quite what's going on. And I don't know how everything that sort of how the like the heroes were banding together, what they were doing to defeat. I kind of couldn't really grasp of what the actual, you know, what was really going on, you know, because they're having this thing where these like entities were which have been around for like centuries or something, all decided to make an appearance, and they basically made bodies on themselves with like human like beings as their sort of skin. and we're doing this like weird song business. And then there was this alien invasion from outer space, and Aquaman had these crystals that he was going to create his own song. And I was just reading it. And I was just thinking, I really don't get what is going on, but whatever.
Yeah. And here's the thing too. I like Brian Hitch before. He's a really good artist, and he's done really good stories. I don't know if you read it before Rebirth. He did a run on, Justice League of America, which incidentally, the way Rebirth sort of stepped on its toes, we're never actually going to get a resolution, because right. It's one of those things that the book came out, or the book was wrapping up as Rebirth came out, but I guess it wasn't selling enough to where DC felt justified releasing it. So if you haven't already, check out that story with the Sun God. That's a really good story. But yeah, this story, and I'll sort of maybe expound about what I feel like, because we've been reviewing it on Comic Conversations, and sort of my opinion on it is it wasn't a really good story right out the gate with Rebirth with Justice League. But at the same time, where I've seen this with comic books before, if they're telling a really big story, and there is, in fact, like you mentioned earlier, there's several moving parts, and maybe you don't know exactly what's going on, but I've seen this with comic books, even my favorite writer, Jonathan Hickman, where they'll establish things here and there, and they're telling a very big story. So the idea of, yeah, maybe this out the gate isn't all that great, but maybe give it a couple more issues and it might get good. But yeah, I'm sort of there right there with you. It's like, I don't know what's going on. And the worst part is I don't care that I don't know what's going on. I'll give it a couple more issues, but this may be something where maybe further down the line when they're in their 20s, that it may make a lot more sense. But right now, this story doesn't seem like it's making a lick of sense.
No, it's just, and I have to admit, my own personal tastes in comics, I'm more of a sort of, I'm not really into the sort of the magic or the cosmic stuff. I'm more into like the sort of the more down to earth stuff. You know, I'm more of a street action type thing. So something like, for example, Daredevil, Captain America, you know, X-Men and that sort of thing. Something I can sort of, you know, relate to and get my teeth into. A lot of these things, when we're sort of doing the whole sort of the big concepts, it just leaves me cold. You know, I'm sort of, you know, the stuff where we're sort of or doing stuff with like powerful crystals, and then sort of like doing mystic stuff on there, and always seem to figure out from nowhere how we're going to basically sort of save the day. Those type of storylines just sort of, you know, bore me to something. I need something sort of tangible that I can sort of see of why they're doing what they're doing, and sort of, you know, that sort of thing. You don't have to explain everything, but I just have to sort of know of, you know, when we've won the day, I like to know how they've won the day. And when I sort of as I'm reading this, I kept going back and thinking, oh, I'm missing something. And it's just sort of, especially with this being Rebirth, to me, this is sort of like a good, you know, and the fact that they're sort of like lowered the price thing, price of the comics, so we're trying to get like people to try these comics and stuff. I think you need to make something which is a little bit accessible to people who maybe aren't sort of like, you know, being in touch with sort of that sort of comics. You know, like they did with the Batman storyline that I really, really enjoyed, where they have the two Gotham superheroes in there. This one, this Justice League, I'm all for big and spectacular stuff. And when you've got something like the Justice League, where you need a big, powerful, enemy or you know, some sort of concept for them to fight to make it worthwhile, you've got all these like really powerful heroes. But in this one, it was just kind of, you know, I'm reading it, I'm thinking, I don't get this, and I personally don't think that the creators really get it either. I think, you know, but that's just me.
Okay.
But I have high hopes for Suicide Squad versus Justice League.
I'm skeptical, because it's just like, obviously, because it's not really the focus of the story, I presume, is not going to be them fighting, because I imagine that'd probably be a very short encounter. But I have to imagine it's a story that involves both teams. So I don't know the creative on that. Dazza, can you very quickly, you know who's...
I don't. I just saw the ads. The only thing I know about it, I think they're doing, I think there's like a six, I think there's going to be a six issue series, which are either going to be either weekly or fortnightly. And then there's going to be a couple of issues in each one of, so there's going to be a couple of issues in Justice League, a couple of issues in Suicide Squad, which are kind of like the crossovers in. So it's basically going to be like the, like 10, issues overall of this sort of this clash between them. And I think from what I got the idea that it's basically the Justice League decide that they're going to basically get Amanda Waller to get rid of the Task Force X program. That's kind of how I sort of read it. So it's going to be, I'm guessing it's going to be lots of, basically sort of, you know, the Justice League trying to basically battle the Suicide Squad and the Suicide Squad fighting dirty and fighting guerrilla war tactics type thing to sort of compete. So, you know, I think to me, it's just something, I'm a Suicide Squad fan. I've been reading the old comics, from the back in the 80s, Ostrader, I think, did the run. So I'm kind of a Suicide Squad fan anyway. So this is kind of what I'm, you know, something that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, the writer.
Much in the same way that the comic that got you into comics was X-Men versus Avengers. So, you know.
I'm not proud to admit that, but yes.
It works, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you get those two teams, those big names, yeah. The writer on that is Joshua Williamson. I'm looking at stuff. Yeah. I guess he's currently writing Flash as well as Frostbite, which is a Vertigo series. I'm looking at his other things. Ooh, he told a really good story in Secret Wars, the Red Skull story. That was really good.
Yeah, I liked that one.
That was really good. He's written Superman and / Batman. Oh, he writes the current Haunted Mansion series. Me and Alex really enjoyed that. Oh, did he write this? Illuminati, the current series from post Secret Wars. That was a fun series. Other notables. So he's been around the block before. He's actually.
It's the sort of thing that if they choose the right story to write. You know, that I think that could be sort of really entertaining. It's if they tried to do something where they tried to bring in elements of sort of, you know, have this sort of like, you know, powerful MacGuffin that they're sort of they're going to fight over something. That's when it's good. And sort of bringing elements that aren't really sort of what the Suicide Squad stories are normally like. I think if they do something like that, because that was my problem with X-Men versus Avengers. I think, they had so many different stories they could have sort of told him that way. And then they went down the path of having everyone becomes a phoenix type thing. And sort of, you know, that to me was kind of, you know, they tried to make it sort of bigger than they actually needed it to be concept wise. So if they sort of keep this sort of grounded and have it sort of as kind of like anti-heroes versus heroes and basically sort of, you know, I think it could be, you know, an entertaining storyline.
Okay.
I have hopes anyway.
Aside from your 2001 AD articles, is there anything else you want to plug before we wrap this up?
There's nothing up as of yet, but there's two articles that I'm basically working on. I'm just trying to sort of, I need to sort of find some more ideas, but I'll tell you what they are. One of them, I'm going to do a, MMA matches that we never got to see, which is basically going to be sort of MMA matches that basically we could have, that basically would have been sort of big matches, but for one reason or another just never actually happened. Okay. And I just need to find a few varieties of examples on there. That's what I'm going to be doing soon. And another one, I got an idea for this, today, and it's basically, It's basically, I've got an idea to do an article. I do film stuff from time to time where I do like listings, and I'm going to do an article which is basically the best film deaths. So, I'm basically just trying to find like enough to do an article on, but I've already got a few ideas of ones which are going to be in there, but yeah, the best, film deaths.
All right. There you go. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's show. Anything else that you want to very quickly go over?
Only that I'm watching the Ryder Cup at the moment and Europe are just behind the USA. Which probably means nothing to you, but it means a lot in our household.
Well, there you go. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.